You're just in time for the best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, the radio outreach of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Dr. Carrie Gress, author of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast, a podcast that is committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to your earbuds. I want you to be able to really focus on these very exceptional people. And there seem to be no end to how many wonderful women today are writing books. Today on the podcast, another exceptional woman. Her name is Carrie Gress. She's a fellow at the Washington, D.C.-based think tank Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's a scholar at the Institute for Human Ecology. She's a doctorate in philosophy. She's the editor at the online woman's magazine Theology of Home. She's the author of 10 books. And I am really excited about a book that my son David put into my hands and said, Dad, you have to read this book. It's titled The End of Woman. I mean, this is an intriguing title, The End of Woman. It's subtitled How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. And in this book, I don't usually read from the flap cover of a book, but I do want to read a few excerpts from the inside front and inside back cover flaps. Feminism doesn't empower women. I mean, that's an incredible statement because most people, when they hear the word feminism, they hear it through a very positive filter or lens. But Carrie says that feminism doesn't empower women, it erases women. After 50 years of radical feminism, we can't even define woman. Feminism has served to abolish women. And then this sentence, hulking trans women are trashing female athletes. Women are aborting their baby girls. Drag queens are now performing obscene parodies of women. And still feminists cling to their illusions of liberation. Carrie Gress is a wife, she's a mother, she's a philosopher, and she, in this book, The End of Woman, she punctures the myth of feminism. And she says that only a rediscovery of true womanhood can pull our society back from the brink. For feminism's victims, Gress is a welcoming voice in the darkness as she answers the quintessential question, who is responsible for murdering the wonder of womanhood? Carrie, I am truly honored to have you on the podcast. You know, I always tell people you have to read a book three times to really own the material. And the way I do it, and I repeat this not to draw attention to myself, but I hope people get in this habit. The first time I read through a book, I sort of speed read it. The second time, I underline it with a Pentel, and third time, I use a highlighter. And that's the way I own the material. And I got this from C.S. Lewis. He said, you have to read a book three times to really master its contents. But this is a book that's really worth mastering, and it's a timely book. And I am just delighted and proud to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you. I'm really moved by your introduction, so I really appreciate being here.
Well, you're absolutely amazing. You talk about the vulnerability of women. I want you to elaborate on that to begin the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful place to start because, you know, this is one of the things that we've really glossed over in the culture is this idea of what happens when a woman becomes pregnant and just the radical vulnerability that is associated with that, both, you know, during the time while she's pregnant, but then also certainly after the child is delivered. And, you know, this has been what I think what feminism has really tried to eradicate is any kind of what, you know, perceived weakness. But you can see, you know, really in God's plan, the beauty of this, that there's this woman becomes vulnerable and, you know, together she and the child have to be taken care of. And just the beauty of the husband and the extended family and all of these different ways in which people have to give of themselves in order for a family and a community to flourish. And so I think that, you know, the earliest question that feminists were asking, because they saw the vulnerability as a real problem. And, you know, to their credit, this was a major concern. You had, you know, 1 in 20 women died from childbirth. I mean, there were some serious things. There's obviously abuse and all of those kinds of things. But, you know, to have the solution be that we need to make women like men instead of saying, how do we help women in this vulnerable situation become better women? That's really what the beginning of the end and really where they started the movement off and just progressed forward. So we can see how, you know, just this effort to erase that vulnerability is what we're left with today. And just this idea that women aren't supposed to be fertile. And, you know, along with that goes, of course, the family and that tender relationship between mother and child and, you know, all of those aspects of the family that are so vital for any, you know, flourishing culture.
How many women do you think, maybe it's hard to give an exact statistic here, but how many women realize that they have been sold a bill of goods when it's just too late?
Oh, I think so many, so many. I mean, obviously I don't have statistics. I just know more from my personal experience of women telling me, you know, a sort of horror and tragedy in terms of, you know, they can't go back and change things. And I know for a long time I bought into it in terms of what is it that I'm supposed to be doing to be considered a successful woman in the culture today? And, you know, if I finally gratefully had the realization that the things that I was doing were actually working against me, and especially when it came to relationships with men and, you know, the kind of ambition that we're told to have and being outspoken and sharp tongued and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And I just saw the negative fruit in my life. And I think, but there's so many of us that just, we don't know an alternate view. And that's the real harm that's been done in the culture is that most women have no idea how much they've been brainwashed into thinking right along step with the feminist ideology that's so pervasive today.
Titles are always fascinating to me. The End of Woman, it's one of those titles that captures your imagination immediately. The subtitle as well, I'd like you to elaborate on both.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll start with the subtitle. That actually came to me first because I was really trying to just capture what is it that has happened and that, you know, this realization that the whole focus, I mean, if you go to a women's march, it's all about the patriarchy. You know, that you can buy products that talk about ending the patriarchy and the future is female and all of this kind of propaganda. And that seems to be an incredibly pithy way to communicate what it is that they are trying to communicate. And, you know, we certainly see this in the new Barbie film. I mean, it's hugely successful, but embedded in that is the doctrine of getting rid of the patriarchy. So, but what I wanted to communicate was just that we have done this to ourselves, that this has sort of been this sort of self-implosion that has happened. But the title itself, I mean, this was a work in progress for quite a while with the publisher, but I think, you know, it was also just this realization, this is what's happening, is women are being erased. And how do we communicate that, you know, that this is happening on a grand scale? So I just feel really grateful that we were able to come up with both a title and a subtitle that I think communicates a lot. The cover, of course, was another really important piece. And that actually happened almost the last few days before it was going to the publisher, we came up with a new cover. So anyway, it was just really beautiful to see how all of these pieces came together to communicate, you know, what you want to communicate in a book, because that obviously doesn't always happen, I think, for authors.
So what happens if the patriarchy disappears?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing that. I think what we're seeing is the goal in the 1970s was really to try and break down the family through the use of creating immorality in the culture. So Kate Millett, who's, you know, was one of a very radical feminist, she wrote the book Sexual Politics. She was on the front cover of Time magazine. Kate had this idea based on the Frankfurt School and, you know, all these earlier leftists and Marxists, that if women could promote things like homosexuality, promiscuity, prostitution, you know, all of these kinds of things, that really takes away any kind of power that a man has over his family. It takes away his voice. It really undermines it. And we can see echoes of this in the culture today where schools are targeting children and, you know, circumventing the parents. So that was a very focused effort. And I think what we've seen is men don't know how to react in this culture. They don't know how to behave. They don't know how to treat women. You know, I think so many feel very threatened by kind of this verbal bandsaw that they're afraid to walk into with any kind of discussion about feminism. So as a result, they just sort of throw their hands up and just give up entirely. And I don't fault men for that. I mean, I think that's another thing that I really wanted to do with this book was give men a place where they weren't blamed and, you know, could actually start navigating these issues and think through them carefully without, you know, feeling like they had to feel guilty by the time they were done with the book. So I think what we are seeing is just this suppression really of the masculine in ways that are, you know, incredibly unhealthy and so damaging because it creates this kind of dual resentment.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Carrie Gress. Feminism doesn't empower women, it erases them. 50 years of radical feminism have solidified the primacy of the traditionally male sphere of life and devalued the attributes, virtues, and strengths of women. We can't even define woman. Carrie Gress, a wife, mother, and philosopher, punctures the myth of feminism, exposing its legacy of abuse, abandonment, and anarchy. Be sure to read The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
If you're not horrified, you should be. Because the relentless assaults of wokeism on sanity and common sense have now reached a fevered pitch. In fact, some astute observers see more than deranged ideologies at work. It's as though the gates of hell have been opened. And alarmingly, the speed of this mindless rush to chaos and potential civilizational collapse is gaining momentum daily. That means Christians need to wake up and wake up fast. One of the best alarm clocks is the upcoming special Woke edition of the Christian Research Journal. It contains sobering articles with penetrating analyses of a social disease that is reaching a flashpoint. To receive your copy of this special edition of the Christian Research Journal, visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI.
To fully grasp the significance of Christ's messianic role, you must drink deeply from the wellspring of Old Testament prophecy. In Hebrews, as in the rest of the New Testament, the Old Testament history of Israel is interpreted as a succession of types that find ultimate fulfillment in the birth, death, resurrection, and ascension of the Christ we celebrate at Christmas.
Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated. This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Cary Gress, as they continue their conversation.
I think what we are seeing is just this suppression, really, of the masculine in ways that are, you know, incredibly unhealthy and so damaging, because it creates this kind of dual resentment. I mean, women already have this built-in resentment because feminism has told us we're victims. And men are really experiencing firsthand, whether it's in their own relationships or their place of work or in the culture, you know, this kind of prejudice, and that they're oppressors and they have to be put down. And so this mutual resentment wedge between the sexes is obviously not good for anybody and is creating so much discord in, you know, all families, but also places of work. And I think men have really been silenced by it.
What is the significance of our inability in Western culture to even define what a woman is?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because part of it is it's just political. You know, the idea of, I mean, the real definition of woman, obviously the short definition is, you know, adult female human. And the longer one, I think, involves discussion about motherhood, which I think extends not just to biological motherhood, but women are meant to be psychological and spiritual mothers to those around them as well. So I think the real fear is that if you define a woman, then you're automatically excluding those who might be trans or those who think that they're a woman. And that's the real taboo that has come out of this. And, you know, the feminist movement since the 70s, at least, has really wanted to get rid of gender entirely. So you can see this sort of churning going on very early on. Even Simone de Beauvoir was talking about this in her existential philosophy, of this idea of getting rid of what she and others have called the social construct of gender, and really moving to this direction of, you know, genderlessness, which you can see, you know, went right along with this idea of getting rid of a woman's fertility, getting rid of motherhood. So it's incredibly political. I mean, it's just that nobody wants to offend those who are either feminist or otherwise, who think that if they're a man in a woman's clothing and think they're a woman, that they are a woman. So that's really what's pushing this, what's behind that whole motivation.
Relate the title of the book, The End of Woman, to people like Caitlyn Jenner, to Rachel Levine, to Leah Thomas, to Ricky Valerie Cole, these men, biological men, who are now lauded as the quintessence of what it means to be a woman.
Yeah. No, and that, I think that's just the remarkable part, is all these women who have fought for the rights of women and for the recognition of women. And, you know, suddenly they're lockstep with these men who think that they're women. So, yeah, you can really see that what's happening is that for, you know, all the efforts that women are making, suddenly we're sort of right back where we started from, because Caitlyn Jenner, of course, was Woman of the Year. You've got Rachel Levine, who's the most decorated military. I can't remember what her title was or his title.
She's the first female four-star admiral.
Thank you. So these areas in which, you know, women are still striving and talking about sort of this glass ceiling are now being filled up with trans women. So that's, I think, the fundamental problem. And of course, you know, sports is going to become, unless states are really willing to make the effort to outlaw boys and girls sports, that's going to be the next area for sure, that women are just going to continually be pushed out just merely by sheer biology. I mean, that's just how it works. So yeah, that's really the trend that we're seeing, is women are just being pushed out by these men who are claiming to be women.
To what the end of women. Talk about the irreparable harm that feminism has done with these ABCs. I think about abortion, birth control, and then casual sex.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge question and, you know, very separate parts. I think, you know, you could see in someone like Margaret Sanger that, again, that question of how do we make women more like men? How do we allow women to have sexual relations and that sort of similar side effects of what men experience without resulting in a 9-month pregnancy and, of course, a child thereafter? So, you know, that was definitely part of the push of the 1900s. But you get in what happened fundamentally is that contraception then allowed couples who are heterosexual couples to start thinking of their sexual relationships just in terms of pleasure. And so it doesn't take too many decades before people are realizing, well, how is our sexual act any different than what same-sex couples are doing. It's just about pleasure as well. So when you tear out that piece of fertility, you know, it changes the dynamic entirely. And I think, you know, it took quite a while for that to happen, but slowly those things changed. But in addition to that, we know that, you know, abortion has been argued, you know, before the Dobbs decision, of course, that women had to have abortion because their birth control might not work. And so abortion became the backstop of a child who wasn't wanted, needed to be taken care of, because abortion truly is what feminists and what the national narrative, you know, tells women every day. That is the way that we level the playing field, by making women, allowing women to be like men because they don't have to bear a child. So these kinds of things have really, you know, dramatically changed our sense of ourselves and continually idolized the masculine. You know, you see this sort of in the girl boss language and, you know, all of those different elements. So they have played a really significant role in leading to, you know, the trans movement and leading to same-sex marriage. All of these kinds of things have changed the landscape of the culture significantly.
You make the interesting point in the book that not anyone could write this book. A man really couldn't write this book. Only a woman could write this book, and not just any woman. Elaborate on that.
Yeah. So I was really puzzled. Why doesn't this book exist? Because I found all of this content from this particularly first wave feminism that I had never heard in my life. And I had dug very deeply into second wave feminism. And so I was just amazed, like, why has no one written this book? And of course, you know, like you mentioned, a man couldn't have written the book because nobody would read it. I think the feminists would be so quick to say, you know, it's just a patriarchal screed. I also, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom by and large. That's how I spend most of my time. And I don't have tenure anywhere. I don't have a career that, you know, if I'm canceled from, is going to change our life very much. So I think that was the other reason. I've had people in the past, women approach me and say, how can you get away with writing the books that you have written? And, you know, that's part of it, is I'm not worried about being canceled the way that someone who has been, you know, building a career for many decades is. So I think that's the real advantage of, you know, my position and why I was able to get this book through and out to people. We'll see how long it lasts until it, you know, inevitably it will be canceled by someone somewhere. But yeah, I think it's nice to be in this place where I have some relative safety compared to other women who might be interested in the topic.
An incredible statement made in the book that I'd like you to elaborate on as well. The idea that feminism, only next to Marxism, is the most powerful brand in the world. I mean, this is a brand that has ubiquitous power.
Yeah. One of the things that I really wanted to do with this book was make it accessible for people that didn't have any kind of philosophical background, because there is a lot of content on women, but a lot of it is in very academic language and really hard to read and not remotely a page turner. And I wanted this book to be a page turner. I wanted anybody to be able to sit down with it and, you know, read the whole thing. So I tried to figure out, you know, how do I talk about feminism in a way that anybody can understand? And of course, you know, we understand brands well. We understand, you know, Nike and Adidas and all of these different ways in which companies rebrand themselves and they present a message, and there's a whole ethos that goes with it. And so it just seemed like feminism was it was much easier to describe it instead of just as an ideology or a philosophical tradition. It was a lot easier to talk about it as a brand, because you can see how it's gone through these different stages where it has rebranded itself. It's reinvented itself. And, you know, we see this even, as I mentioned, Barbie already, but Barbie's just another example of feminism rebranding itself to a new audience. So a lot of the feminists that are, you know, created so much public policy and public perception that we see today, a lot of them are getting older. Most of them are over 60. And so you can see, you know, a movie like Barbie, which uses a lot of kind of emotional and irrational argumentation. It uses pink, it uses nostalgia, it uses some tender moments, that this is a way that they're trying to rebrand feminism to appeal to a new generation. It's because if you come out, you know, and this is the cleverness, I think, that happened in the 1950s and 60s. Betty Friedan used this masterfully. You know, if the Marxists came out and said, we just want you to be Marxist, and just told people on a rational level, you know, go back and read Marx or something, it would never have taken root. And of course, in the Soviet Union, it was done by force through the military. People realized that was not going to happen in the United States, and it had to be done through other means, through advertising in particular. And, you know, the force of media and television, those things were all coming, you know, into their own when around the time of feminism's rise. So this is really how they've been so effective in branding it, by using the ways in which women think, you know, the ways in which women can be convinced very, very easily without using rational argumentation.
You do a wonderful job of breaking the book into three major sections before you get to the solution: the lost girls, the mean girls, and no girls. Talk a little bit about that first category, the lost girls, the girls that are broken and yet are the ones who set the table for feminism as we see it today.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. One of the patterns that really emerged from my research was, you know, I looked back at all these women, Mary Wollstonecraft and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and, you know, certainly Kate Millett and others that came later. But 201, these were all incredibly broken women. They all had, you know, major areas in their life that needed healing or that needed, you know, some kind of resolution to. And the hard part is that rather than looking back and saying, you know, I just had horrible parents, the solution was, well, we just need to change parents.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Cary Gress. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us by Cary Gress. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more.
If you thought the pandemic was scary, it may actually pale in comparison to today's pandementia. We're talking about wokeism and its growing legions of followers who have defiantly and dangerously declared their independence from reality. That's right, for those infected by the woke virus, anytime their ideology encounters reality, ideology wins. To help halt the advance of this deadly social and mental disease, you'll want a copy of the upcoming special edition of the Christian Research Journal. In it, you'll feast on penetrating analyses and criticisms of one of the most dangerous ideologies in modern history, all written to help you grasp just how deranged this tyrannical movement actually is. To receive your copy, visit equip.org, that's equip.org, or call 888-7000-CRI, that's 888-7000-CRI.